beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven. And there was evening and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens." So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
Thank you, Becky, very much indeed. Our series is Total Jesus, and today, if you look up on the screen there, you'll see that our theme is Jesus is Creator of the Universe, Universe Creator, the God that's spoken of, that we've just heard read from the beginning of the Bible, the first chapter of the Bible, Hebrews tells us is none other than Jesus Christ. So turn to the back end of the Bible, to page 1202, page 1202, to Hebrews chapter 1, which is where we've got our series based on Jesus at the moment. Jesus, total Jesus, he's the universe creator. I want to begin by reminding us of a verse that certainly as I've been preaching through the series at 4 o'clock and at 6 o'clock, I've begun in the same way. And you might think, well, it's getting a bit monotonous. But if I keep repeating this verse, it may well be that we'll memorize it and it'll get stuck in our minds and our hearts. And that would be a very, very good thing indeed. Psalm chapter 16, verse 8 says this: I have set the Lord always before me. I have set the Lord always before me. And that is what we are doing in this Total Jesus series. We are setting the Lord Jesus before ourselves, before our mind's eye, before our imagination, into our thinking. We're setting him before us and we're engaging with him, and we're hoping and we are praying that we'll rediscover the rest of that verse, the implication, the results of that will be ours as we do set Jesus before ourselves in that way. As we've gone through this Total Jesus course so far, this sermon series, this course of Bible talks, we've rediscovered that this preacher from an obscure part of the world, who went no further than 100 miles from home, who never wrote a book, is the last word on God. The last word on God. There is nothing more to say. There is nothing more to hear about God than this Jesus that we are setting before ourselves. We've also rediscovered in verses 1 to 4 of Hebrews chapter 1, we've also rediscovered that this teacher who never held a public office, who was executed as a criminal, is none other than the rightful heir. Matt was teaching us last week, the rightful heir, the king, the ruler of absolutely everything, including you and including me. So if you look carefully on the bottom of your foot before you go to bed tonight, you'll see it written there, inscribed in the bottom of your foot, owned by Jesus. All right? And if you've got a good atheistic friend, you can encourage them to do the same thing. Of course, they won't find it. But there, get them to do it. Make them think. Owned by Jesus. He is the heir of absolutely everything in the universe, including you and including me. And as I said at the Lord's Supper and prayer on Thursday, I found myself asking this question: is my Jesus too small? Is my Jesus too small? And I've had to be honest in my own heart, in my own thinking, and I've had to admit, yes, he is. Yeah, I found myself realizing that my Jesus is too small, in which case, he's not the true Jesus, he's a false Jesus. He doesn't exist. He's a figment of my imagination. I've got him wrong. Now, when I find myself worrying or concerned about all sorts of things that worry and concern me, in terms of, use a real and a living example, in terms of our church. When I find myself worried and concerned about the shortage of space, I mean, students generally, some students are still here, but generally students have gone, some internationals have gone, and still we're near 75% full this evening, and I kind of think, well, what about space? Central at 4, as Chung was praying earlier on, we're carrying on growing. We're not growing so much at the adult level, but we're growing. We've got all these little people, and they, you know, you turn up at Central at 4, they fill the chairs. They're part of the church. I mean, and they filled it, and by the 5th of August, when Paul and Jenny's baby, your baby's due on the 5th of August, you know, we're going to have having 26 babies, 28 babies in Ripples, that's the creche. And I worry, because my Jesus is too small. Just like I did last year when we hit, this time last year, a £40,000 budget deficit. Because my Jesus is too small. He's a big Jesus. And I didn't, even if you hadn't sorted that one out, why worry? My Jesus is in control, even when things are going wrong. Those are some of the things that have been going through my heart. I need to repent of them, and I need to fix in my mind, set before myself the Lord Jesus, the Jesus of the Bible, the true Jesus, King Jesus, the Jesus who is God. That Psalm 16 verse 8 goes on, I set the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand. I know the one who set before myself, the Jesus of the Bible. I know that he's with me. With him at my right hand, I shall not be shaken. That verse goes on. Therefore, my heart is glad. My whole being rejoices. If I don't want to be shaken, if I want to rejoice, my whole being, inside out, my soul, my mind, my heart, my all, put this Jesus in front of myself. Know he's next to me. The creator of the universe, as we engage with him this evening. Want to know this Jesus? I want a bit of this rejoicing and my heart to be glad and this steadiness in life. Well, let's set him before us again ourselves this evening. Jesus, firstly, is creator of the universe. The section of the verse we're looking at is just a small section of verse 2, labelled 2C on the screen there, because it's the last section of the verse there. Through whom also he created the world. And we're also going to be picking up a little section in verse 3. He upholds the universe by the word of his power. We're going to look at both those things this evening. First of all, he is the creator of the universe. Verse 2 says he's the one through whom also he, that is God, created the world. Now that word world isn't simply talking about the planet that we're on. It reads like that, but that's not what's being referred to here. The actual Greek word, if you just bear with me, I know it's warm in here, but bear with me. I mean, I'm not brilliant at Greek, so I'm very able at teaching the amount that I know to you, because there isn't much to learn. The Greek word there is the word aeons. And it's an easy word for us to understand in English, because it sounds exactly like it does and would if it was an English word. Eons. Forever. It's a forever. It's a big time word. It's talking about the vast great ages. This is saying that Jesus is the creator of the vastness of the ages, the eons. That's what it's saying here, is that Jesus is the creator of it all. That means, if he's the creator of all time, it means that he stands outside of time. It means he's creator. Anything in time has been created. But he stands outside of time with God the Father as creator of absolutely everything. He was there before time began. Time was created through him. Jesus, if I can put it this way without being flippant, is the Time Lord. Don't know if you're in Doctor Who. Recent series ended last night. Jesus is the creator of time. He is the ultimate time Lord. He is the Lord of time. But Hebrews means more than time when it talks about eons. Just give your place in chapter 1 and turn on to chapter 11, where the same word is used again, but it's used a little bit more broadly. So get have a look at what it's said here. In chapter 1, the word eons is translated world. Here in chapter 11, verse 3, it's translated universe. It's the same. It's the same word. By faith we understand that the universe, the aeons, was created by the word of God, so what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. See that? It's actually talking about eons, referring to not just time, but everything that's created within time. So eons isn't just the spread of the ages, it's everything that exists within the ages. It's created by none other, coming back to chapter 1, through Jesus Christ. So, let's get the picture in our minds. From the most distant star, millions of light years away, to your closest friend. Jesus made them all. From the largest, the most vast galaxy in the universe, to the tiniest brain cell in your brain as it's thinking right now and computing the information that it's hearing through your ear. Jesus is the creator of the vastness out there and the tiniest right there in your head. He's the creator. Well, we go from the most beautiful high mountain and the most wonderful view, panoramic view we've ever seen from the highest position on the planet we've ever stood or been in an aeroplane, from that vastness. And what we can see, Jesus created that vast beauty right down to, you've seen them pictures in books or perhaps on the telly, the most ugly little monster of a terrifying little fish to all the creatures that are smaller than it at the bottom of the sea. Jesus, creator of them both. From the vast cruelty, as it were, if you're on the receiving end of the bite of the great white shark, that vast predator, to the five or six minuscule little chicks that were finding their way out of the nest in our front garden the other day, that we were fearful for, that the magpies were just sitting watching and waiting to swoop down and snap them up. Jesus, the creator of them both, the creator of absolutely everything, from most wealthy, the most powerful man on the planet, to the poorest, humblest, homeless child. From the first split second of the universe, through the origins of mankind, right through to whatever brings to the whole universe to an end, Jesus made it all. He created all of time. He created everything that is within time. That is the vastness of the Jesus that we know. And I get worried over little things. Why? Do I know this Jesus? Is my Jesus too small? So what would I expect, what would you expect if we read an account of his life? Say that we read that this Jesus described here went into the home of a little girl who had died with the intention of bringing her back to life again. See, we may not be surprised if we read that relatives and friends who were gathered in that home with the grieving family, we wouldn't be surprised if we read that they laughed at Jesus for going in with that intention. But we know this Jesus and who he is, so as we read it, we're not surprised at all. Not surprised one bit when he takes a little dead hand in his hand. He looks into a little dead face and says, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, get up." It doesn't surprise us at all. It doesn't surprise us at all if we read next that she actually gets up. And Jesus says to her mum and dad, "Give her something to eat." And she goes and has a little breakfast. Doesn't surprise us at all. Because who is this Jesus? He's the creator of the universe. He's the creator of time. He's the creator of life. Of course he can do that. It's for him, it's an absolute cinch. It's an absolute simple one for him to figure out and to do. He is the origin of life. He gave you life. He gave me life. John's Gospel in the Bible, Jesus says, "I am life." He's life. He created it all. Secondly, he sustains the universe. He sustains the universe. And at this point, we kind of like have a bit of a wonderful dovetail with Central at Four. And there are some folks who stayed on from Central at Four who are here now. And you'll hear some of the echoes between what's said here and Colossians. These things aren't just said in one part of the Bible. The Bible's peppered with these wonderful truths. He sustains the universe. Jesus is not a cosmic clockmaker who built the universe, wound it up and left it to run down on its own. He was there at the start and he's present now sustaining it. So look at that section of verse 3. He upholds the universe by the word of his power. He upholds the universe. He's not like the mythological god Atlas, you know, with a dead weight. You know, Atlas in Greek mythology is a great muscular god with a dead weight planet on his back. you know, bearing the weight of the world. Now that's not the metaphor that's being used here. And not just sort of sustaining a dead weight. It's talking about him being intimately and intrinsically involved, dynamically involved, carrying out everything forward on its course. So, if we can just get our minds around this a little bit, if I can just try and help us do that. From the dark matter and the dark energy, if they exist, scientists have concluded that something bigger than everything we can see, something bigger than that is observable, must exist, otherwise the universe wouldn't be the way it is. There must be something bigger than everything we know. And we can't see it, so they call it dark matter. There must be some other energy that holds it all together and makes the dynamic of the universe. And they call it dark matter, dark energy, and the very fringes of the universe, there's this dark flow. No one's actually found these, and no one's got it in a bottle. It's never actually been proven to exist. It's just that they know something else is there. There must be. What this is saying is that Jesus is the one who, by the word of his power, sustains dark energy, dark matter, dark flow, the whole of space. He does all that on the vast, great big scale of things, and yet he's able to engage right in the intimate detail of what's going on. Let's go straight to our brains again. The pulse that takes the message from your brain to make your toe twitch is sustained by Jesus and the power of Jesus. He not just keeps the whole universe and its planets in order, he's engaged with us at that very level as well. From the massive power of gravity that keeps the sun and the planets and the moons and the solar system all going in the wonderful orbit that they go in, to the gentle flow of nutrients from the roots of the rose in our garden that flow up to keep the flower budding in the spring into the summer. Jesus controls it all. From the terrifying power of a tsunami to the direction the water goes down the plug hole when we did our teeth this morning, Jesus sustains the universe. That's what's being said here. How does he do this? Verse 3 tells us exactly how he does it. It tells us that he does it by the word of his power. The powerful word of Jesus, and Becky read it earlier on, the powerful word of God that brought the universe into existence, let there be, and there was, this is saying, is the powerful word that's operating now to keep it all working, to make it all happen. That's how the world is sustained. That's how the universe is sustained right now. So, again, let's go back to think through what would we expect to read. What would we be surprised to read if we were reading an account of this man's life, this Jesus' life? Well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we read in a part of his account that he found himself out there in the middle of nowhere, miles from anywhere, with 5,000, well, at least 5,000 people, who had nothing but two loaves and, five loaves and two fish to eat. Nothing else. I wouldn't need to find any way out of that being a wonderful miracle. Because right there is the person who sustains the whole universe. Why is it so difficult for him to sustain 5,000 people in the middle of nowhere? I was never any good at maths, but let me illustrate the point in this way. For some reason I chose to do engineering in my first degree. I don't know why, but I did. I think it's because I was competitive, and my dad and the headmaster told me I'd never get a degree in engineering the way I was planning on going, and I determinedly set to. They were both right. In the sense, they were right. I shouldn't have done it, but at university I had extra maths lessons. And I bought a book called Mathematics, A Second Start, and I must have read it four or five times. And each week, me and two or three others would gather for our extra maths lesson. And Mr. Clancy, who was second head of the department, would teach us maths. And he would go through all sorts of little problems with us and then ask us to engage with them and, ask us questions. And I was always getting them wrong. Gladly, the two or three other people in the class were always getting them wrong as well. And he would always say, he thought in the most encouraging fashion, following any of my questions, he thought it was encouraging. I always found it not quite so encouraging. He would say, I thought that was an easy one. I thought that was an effort. For him it was. Jesus, feeding 5,000 people, I thought that was an easy one. It is, isn't it? Of course I'd expect him to sustain people in that kind of situation, because he's the one who sustains the entire universe. So what are the implications? If Jesus is the creator of the universe, if he sustains the universe, then there is only one implication. Worship Jesus. Worship Jesus. Let's just take a time out, shall we? And talk to the person sat next to you, especially if it's Ugo, Rob, because I think he's settling in probably after a hard week at work there. I can see him gently dozing there. Does anyone want a glass of water? Put your hand up if you want a glass of water. I'll send Pete upstairs to grab a glass of water. Just talk, Chung wants a glass of water. Pete, can I get a jug of water? Let's just talk about things so far. How does this begin to impact with friends, colleagues, your neighbours? Jesus being the creator of the universe, Jesus being the sustainer of the universe. What are kind of, if they were here now, what would they be wanting to ask me? Yeah? What would they be wanting to ask me? And say, well, hang on, what about this? Just talk about that for a moment with the person or the people sat next to you. And I'll make some fresh air. Get in there. Does anyone want some water? Pete's got a jug of water there. Seriously, if you want some water, just get your hand up. Pete, is a glass of water needed down here? Glass of water there for Chris's mum. Glass of water there needed for Joe. Glass of water needed behind you. Pink sunglasses there. Just there, Pete. Pink sunglasses, Pete. Pink sunglasses. Give her the last drop. She's floundering. Get another jug, Pete. Sheila wants some. Yeah, quickly nip up. Sheila wants one. Thank you. Okay, okay, let's Ugo's looking really bright and breezy now. Excellent. What kind of questions do you think this might raise so far? Lisa's got a comment, you know, pretty ready to throw it. Lisa.
My friends would say, but how can you be sure? How do you know? And like one of my friends came to Matt's job at Starbucks and said, it's great that he has such faith, but how can he be sure?
Yeah. How can you be sure of these things? Yeah, ultimately, how can we be sure? Anyone want to offer an answer to that?
Trust.
Faith. Yeah.
The resurrection.
Yeah.
I think it's looking at the whole Bible as well and seeing how it makes sense.
Yeah.
For the way the world is.
I think so, yeah. I think what we were looking at a couple of weeks ago, verses 1 and 2 of Hebrews, speaks about God and the way He's revealed Himself and the way that He has spoken through His Word. So I'd always want to be taking people myself to the Bible. And sometimes that's, you think, well, hang on, what power is that going to have? How's that going to deliver? And yet, didn't we hear what Matt said earlier on as he talked about that book? Highly recommend it, Secret Believers. Every single story in there of someone who comes to faith is as a result of reading the Bible. And often, they are reading the Bible and comparing it with the Quran. And finding there's a real sense of truth. It rings high. J.B. Phillips was a great Bible translator, and he wrote a book called A Ring of Truth. Because as he translated the Bible, he found time and time again it has a ring of truth. So I would always want to be saying, well, let's actually have a look at the Bible, see what it says, and engage with it. Ultimately, begin to engage with Jesus and His resurrection. And there's plenty of evidence for Jesus' resurrection, for example, that just isn't just in the Bible, elsewhere as well. But yeah, other comments people want to make?
Victor asked me, he said,
if there are aliens, who created them? Good question. Anyone got an answer for that? What would C.S. Lewis say? We all know who C.S. Lewis was. C.S. Lewis is a great author, and back in the 30s and the 40s, there were all sorts of books written, and there were a number of books which were particularly frightening to people. War of the Worlds was published. H.G. Wells wrote War of the Worlds, and whilst that was being read on national radio in America, there was panic because people thought it was true and really happening. That the Martians were on their way. In the context of fear and concern that there was in the late 40s over UFOs and Martians and the like, C.S. Lewis wrote a set of three books, Cosmic Trilogy, Out of the Silent Planet, Voyage to Venus, and That Hideous Strength. And they are stories about other planets and about creatures on other planets. And C.S. Lewis strikingly stood out from all of the other authors of his day and basically said, if there are creatures and animals on other planets, God made them. And he twisted things around. And although this world we were all frightened of aliens coming here, he actually said, particularly in the first book, Out of This Silent Planet, it was a bunch of world scientists going to Mars. We were the folks that took the destruction and the sin there, rather than them being the ones who will bring the destruction and the sin here. The Bible is reasonably silent on that, but as a philosopher, C.S. Lewis, I kind of like want to stick with him and say if Jesus is the creator of the universe, then I would want to stick with that and say, yeah, sure, if there are Martians out there, if there are creatures on other planets, great, fantastic. Made by Jesus, look in the bottom of their feet, if they've got them. That's what I reckon you'd find. Were sustained by who? Well, they disappeared to nothing if Jesus stopped by the word of his power. It's the implication here, isn't it? Jesus is that big. He created, Colossians says that he's, the equivalent passage in Colossians said he's creator of everything visible and invisible. That is, he made everything you can see, if I can put it simply, and everything we can't see. And I guess aliens at the moment is included in the can't see bracket. So ultimately, he's the creator of the universe, he sustains the universe. That means we only have one option, that is worship him. Worship Jesus. But three particular implications. Why worship Jesus? If I can seek to persuade us. First of all, Jesus is your life. Jesus is your life. If everything in the universe was made by Jesus, and if everything in the universe is sustained by Jesus, he is, as it were, if I can put it this way, he is the universe's life support machine. Alright? All he has to do is switch it off, and we stop breathing. Our heart stops beating. Bang, that's it. That's what it's saying, is it not? He's the universe's life support machine. The whole universe is utterly dependent upon him. Every breath you take, every move you make, if I can quote Police from my era, you are Jesus dependent. And so am I. Absolutely Jesus dependent. It means that all disobedience of him is unreasonable. It means that all disobedience of him is foolish. It is foolish, isn't it, if this is true? It means all disobedience of him leads to inevitable and absolute ruin. All he needs to do is stop speaking and you shut down. Without him, you have no life. You can't afford not to worship Jesus. Secondly, Jesus is your meaning. Through Hebrews, we've discovered that Jesus stands at every point in history. And what I want to do now is put together some stuff that Matt was teaching us last week with these two things that we've heard from Hebrews this week. It's very simple, really. Jesus was there at the start of all things. He's creator. Jesus will be there at the end of all things because he is the heir of it all. It all belongs to him. He'll be there at the end to decide upon it all. Beginning, the end. He sustains all things. He's right here now. So he's there at the beginning, he's there at the end, and he's right there all the way through. He's sustaining things. So we've got the beginning, we've got the middle, and we've got the end. So let me illustrate it in this way. Imagine the Earth is a spaceship flying through space, which I guess many people would conclude that, yeah, that's a pretty good analogy, because that's what it is. Okay, so imagine the world is a spaceship and we are sat on that spaceship. What happens if you cut off the start of the journey? No creator. What happens if you cut off the middle of the journey? No accountability and no care happening now. What happens if you cut off the end of the journey? No final judgment. What happens if you cut off any of those things? What do you end up with on your spaceship as you fly through space? Well, imagine it. After 100 years travel in your spaceship, you go up to someone that looks half intelligent and you say to them, "Where are we going?" And they say, "Nobody knows. Nobody knows." Another 100 years go by and you go up to a slightly more intelligent looking person and ask, "How did the journey begin?" And the answer comes back, "Oh, nobody raises that question here. It's impossible to answer. Some say this, some say that, but who knows Who really knows? Well, after another 100 years, you find someone who really is intelligent this time, and you go up to them and you say, "Is anybody looking after us?" And they say, "No, we're looking after ourselves. Some of us work hard to look after others because that seems to be a very good thing to do. And others of us are very keen to look after the spaceship and to keep that in very good order. After all, we don't have another one. This is the only one we've got." You see, I wouldn't be surprised if I was walking down the corridor of the spaceship, say a week later, and found you in the corridor with your hand on the latch about to jump out. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Because you can't live like that. And nor can I. Nor can anybody. We cannot live like that. We cannot live without meaning. Jesus is your meaning. There is only meaning to be had in Him, the Creator, the Sustainer, and the Heir of the entire universe. He's the one in whom we have our lives. He created, He upholds, and He will finish the universe. See, you can't afford not to worship Jesus, and nor can your friends. Without Him, there's no meaning. And thirdly, Jesus is your security. This is clearly one of the reasons the first readers of Hebrews were reminded of the great and awesome and powerful Jesus, who really is true. And just bear with me, you might have finished your water by now, but I'm going to explain this in a slightly roundabout way, but it's important that we understand what was happening to the early readers and understand how this letter fits together in order to understand how this is important and see how it impacts us in a very real and a very wonderful way. So it might seem roundabout, but it's not. So just bear with me and listen in. There is a remarkable description of Jesus in verses 1 to 4. Would you look at it? Just cast your eye through it again. The most fantastic description of the awesome Jesus. And then verse 5 is a little bit strange. It's a little bit strange to your ears, and it's a little bit strange to mine. Why? Because he switches in verse 4 from talking about the great big Jesus to suddenly talking about angels. And we go, huh? Angels? Yeah, what's happening here? Well, why go to which of the angels did God ever say? Well, hang on, angels? I don't really relate to them, quite frankly. What have they got to do with it, we ask? Odd to us, but not to them, the first readers. Angels are a big deal in the Bible. They were there when God gave His Old Testament law, His word, to His people. If you're taking notes, Deuteronomy chapter 33, verses 1 and 2. Hundreds of thousands of angels turned up at the giving of God's word, His law. But God's final word came through His Son, Jesus. That's what's been said in verses 1 and 2. So it's even more important to listen to Jesus, the Son, than it is to listen to the word that came through angels. Now, that's not to say that the word that came through angels shouldn't be listened to, or isn't important. It's hugely important. It's vastly important, but it's even more significant to be listening to this, the culmination of all that, because it's in His Son. That's what's being said here. And so just turn over to chapter 2 and verses 2 to 4. You'll see a little bit of what I'm explaining there, but it is important to the first readers. For since the message declared by angels proved to be reliable, that's the Old Testament, and every transgression or disobedience received a just retribution, how shall we escape if we neglect this, such a great salvation? You know, this one which was declared at first by the Lord Jesus, and was attested to us by those who first heard, while God also bore witness by signs and wonders and various miraculous miracles and by gifts and the Holy Spirit distributed according to His will. So you thought a moment ago, when I'm talking about Jesus being with that little girl, Talitha Kum, and Jesus being with those 5,000, you think that's just illustration? No. it was a demonstration that really this is God who's come. And it's even more important. The Old Testament law came with angels trumpeting. Interestingly enough, I could go on, I could wax eloquent about the beginning of Luke's Gospel, where the Word becomes flesh, to quote John's Gospel, and who appears? A shed load of angels. Alright, so angels are really important in the Bible. And we can discover more perhaps sometime later on in our church's life. Angels are a big deal in the Bible, Angels are also a big deal to Jews in the first century. Sometimes they were worshipped, Colossians chapter 2 and verse 17. But also in Jewish theology, an angel was assigned to each nation, much as we might think of guardian angels. These angels would have authority, have a power in Jewish theology over various nations. But their power is limited to this present world. And so we begin to see, well, why Jesus is so important. Because he made them. He's unimaginably bigger and more powerful, and they might be limited to a nation, but what's he limited to? He's created and sustains the universe. He's there at the beginning, he's sustaining it now, he's going to be there at the end. So suddenly we begin to see why the little thing on angels is really important to the guys then. I mean, suddenly we begin to see why it's helpful for us to think this way, because it underpins and undergirds our understanding of just how big Jesus is. We don't need angels in that sense. You don't need a guardian angel, because you got Jesus. You know, why go for second best, as it were. He is the wonderful living Christ. Ultimately as well, this is where the book of Hebrews is leading. It is leading to the fact that Jesus is the one who has the power not to deliver on this world only, but because he's the creator, he has the power to deliver the next world. And that's where Hebrews chapter 10 and Hebrews chapter 11 it will be taking us. So turn on to Hebrews chapter 11. And verses 32 to 34. Have I got the right chapter here? Am I looking at chapter 12 maybe? Chapter 10. Verse 32 to 34. Look at the words first of all that describe what it was like being a Christian then. Okay, there's a word endured, hard struggle. You see that word suffering. There's a word public reproach. There's a word affliction there. There's the word prison, and there's a little phrase, plundering of your property. Okay, those words describe what it was like being a Christian. That's who this letter was written to. But recall the former days when, after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings, sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction, and sometimes being partners with those so treated. For you had compassion on those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the plundering of your property. See, what keeps a person following Jesus when, for following him, they lose their property or their freedom? Tanya and I, we read this month's Evangelicals Now. This is the church's copy, so you can peruse it later on at your leisure. After we'd kind of like reading it through, as a typical thing went on amongst husband and wife there. I'm reading my newspaper, and suddenly my wife's trying to read at the same time, and I'm going, oh, hang on. She said, hey, I want to read as well. So anyway, we did the Christian thing, Christian newspaper, might as well open it up and share and read it together. So we were reading it, we read it through together, and she said, you know what that newspaper's about? And I said, yeah, it's all about persecuted Christians. And she said, yeah. And she said, there's one more word you should use in that. Or one more, a couple more words. It's basically, she said, it's about Christians who are persecuted by Muslims. And she's right. But there are lots and lots of stories in this one newspaper, and I don't think that's what they set out to do. There's lots of stories in here about persecuted Christians being persecuted by Muslims. And you say, well, what keeps them going? What would keep them going? Following and serving Jesus. What would keep a person following Jesus if they were baptized, a glass ceiling appears on their career? What keeps them serving Jesus? What keeps a person following Jesus when colleagues, because of the line they take on abortion, perhaps, despise them? What keeps a person following Jesus when the secular environment of our culture isolates them or makes them lonely at work, at family, or at home, you know, in the school? What keeps a person following Jesus when they lose their good name? That's here, isn't it? And we can lose our good name in all sorts of little ways. As happened not so far away from me, someone was told, now or introduced to a new set of people, as this is so-and-so, she's a Christian. She doesn't listen to pop songs that have swear words in them. Well, that's really going to help, isn't it, from now on in with this new set of friends? You know, suddenly got an uncool name. Grow up. What kind of naive parents have you got? That's the beginning of the friendship. She happy to be there from then on? These things are happening in your life as well, aren't they? In different ways all the time, aren't they? They do. What keeps us going? Answer: the great, big, powerful, created, sustaining Jesus of Hebrews chapter 1. He's the Jesus we can worship and must worship come what may. He's not limited to this world like an angel or anything else that we might think could deal. And he's not limited to this world like the stock exchange or like our ISA or our PEP or our saving. He's bigger than your mortgage. He's better than your house and your worries that might come that way. He's more significant than the fact that you've not got a job at the moment. He can handle it all. He's bigger than the whole shooting caboodle. He's the Jesus who can deliver on this world. And if things aren't delivered in this world, he's the one who's our absolute security, because he can deliver on the next world, which is exactly where chapter 10 goes on. Look at verse 34 of chapter 10 again. So he talks about the struggles. He talks about the tough times. Let me read from verse 34. For you had compassion on those in prison. You joyfully accepted the plundering of your property, since you knew what? Since you yourselves had a better possession and an abiding one. You got something that'll last. He's your security. He's the big Jesus. Verse 35, therefore do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve our souls. Preserve their souls. Isn't that fantastic? He's your security. He's my security. And he's the Jesus. We must keep this Jesus in front of ourselves, in the vision of our minds and our hearts. The immense cosmic dimensions have got to be there. When we go home tonight, they've got to be there, whatever you do tomorrow. Otherwise, we'll flounder. The Jesus who transcends our highest thoughts, the Jesus who transcends our best experience of him. You know, we're much less likely to give up and turn away when we worship the true Jesus than when we're worshipping a small and a false Jesus.